Welcome to Fuel, an AFC podcast for propelling your leadership journey. I'm Joe Mahalik, the Propel Leadership Development Program Manager. Propel strives to develop leaders who write, speak, and behave consistently with a heart of service. Each month, Fuel gives you up close and personal access to NAFC thought leaders who have been there, done that, and are ready to tell their stories, ready to invest in you. So whether you're interested in learning what leading's all about, or you've been a leader for years, we're all on an ongoing professional journey, which requires Fuel. In this episode, we hear from bureaucracy buster and agent of change, Howard Berkoff.
I see a lot of suffering in silence. I see this all the time. I'm on a warpath these days to make sure people do not suffer in silence, that bad news doesn't stop at a certain level.
Join me on this journey where we learn Howard's approach to building a solution-oriented culture. Good day to everyone. I'm here with the one and only Howard Berkoff, and he's been a good friend and a colleague of mine for, gosh, probably about 4 years now. So I'm really honored that you're willing to be on this podcast today. Welcome.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be here. It's great to chat with you. We've had many long sessions over the past several years over beverages, and we broke bread together and talked about philosophy and families and life and religion. And I'm excited to be here and chat with you today.
We're going to be focusing kind of on your foundations. So could you share a story about how creating a positive and empowering environment within maybe your own organization now, or if there's a more significant story from a past position that helped navigate a period of really significant change or challenge?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. This is so important, is building a foundation, building the right culture, getting the right people on the bus, getting the right mix of people with the right backgrounds, experiences, knowledge, and personalities is so fundamentally important. You know, I always talk about it takes years to build a culture in an organization and to really get an organization, you know, running on all four cylinders. And it can really honestly take, a 5 minutes to tear down a culture and organization, right? With a leader saying the right wrong thing at the wrong time to the wrong person, with someone in the organization that's disgruntled. So keeping a really close eye on the organization is super important. So I will tell you, when I was deputy program manager for the Unmanned Maritime Systems Program Office for the Navy, and we were growing leaps and bounds. This was back about 5-10 years ago. And we were a small group of people at that time, just a small handful of people, and getting the right people with the right mindset. And we were really building the plane as we were flying it, really, to be honest, right? And we were very intentional about getting people that had the right mindset to say, hey, we're going to do something innovative. We're going to do something game-changing for the Navy. We're going to introduce unmanned maritime systems, and we're going to do it fast, and we're going to take the fleet feedback. We're going to engage and make sure we're delivering the right systems, but we're also going to build a strong nucleus. We were going so fast, we were growing so quickly, that we had to trust each other. We had to rely on each other as an organization.
And what the right people look like? I wanted to get clarity on that, because the right people have to be defined to some extent. So for you, it was that innovation.
The mindset that we were entrepreneurs in a world of, we'll say, more conservative shipbuilding by the book. This is how we do things. We in order to go fast, you have to be willing to break glass. You have to be willing to really chop down bureaucratic wickets and really understand what's important, right, to fielding these systems, these capabilities. So all these requirements that apply to, we'll say, manned platforms, do they apply to unmanned platforms? No. Let's get that out of the way. Let's look at what acquisition authorities that we had. Let's make sure we're focused on what's statutory, what's regulatory, and everything else is trade space. Let's understand where our trade space is with respect to fielding unmanned systems, with fielding new capability quickly versus cost and schedule. What is our trade space? So getting people to think differently, to think outside of, we'll say, a traditional acquisition process, a traditional engineering process, where we can take some risk, where we know we can take, we can accept some risk, and we may fail. We may lose a system. We may have a failed test. And that's okay, because going fast means we're going to have some failures. In fact, if you're not failing, you're not going fast, you're not doing about it right. So that's the culture, the mentality of the organization that we were trying to build at that time. Bring in the people who were not afraid of failure, who are not afraid to ask the hard questions, we're not afraid to challenge, we'll say, traditional bureaucratic processes, and people that were willing to make it about the team, right, the we together versus individual heroes as well. And that's super important to keep in mind, right? What we were doing is greater than one person. Yes, we had a dynamic program manager. Yes, we had strong leadership in key positions, but it wasn't about them. It was about the team.
Everything you were describing is all about team. I'm curious, why is it important? Why can't we just be really good at what we do and do it right next to people who are doing what they're doing that, and they're very good at what they do?
In order to be successful, you need a team of diverse talent, experience, and knowledge, right? You need the veterans who've been around, who understand how, let's say, acquisition works, how the fleet works, the operational component. You need young and upstarters who think wildly differently, who don't have any previous baggage, but bring enthusiasm and ideas and a can-do attitude. And you need other people that bring functional expertise at different levels of the organization. And you bring it all together to really, that's where the magic happens, where we really trade the great ideas and initiatives. But the team aspect is so super important, that trust in each other. Everybody has to check their egos at the door. They cannot come in with the attitude that I know it all and I can make it happen. No, you have to come in with the attitude that says, I need my teammates. It's a team effort. We all need to do our part in order to make the greater effort be successful, right? When I walk into a room, I always say, hey, I'm the dumbest person in this room. I'm the facilitator here. I want to make sure that we have the right team dynamic. We have the right open and honest discussions so that everybody feels like their voice is heard, that their experience is heard, because everybody comes from a different background, a different program, a different experience, different knowledge base. And their perspective needs to be heard and considered, right? So each person on the team needs to be an excellent listener as well as an outstanding communicator. And I, as a senior leader now, I tell people that it's your communication is so important, right? You need to be able, I live in the world of sound bites, right? You need to be able to communicate what I need to know in succinct, tight words. And then if I request additional information, I will ask you for that, right? So I usually don't have the time to get down to the nth degree, to the fourth nucleus, the inner triple integral understanding. I'm trusting you that you are the expert and have done that rigor homework. And I'm going to ask you a few questions to make sure that I trust that you know what you're talking about. And then I'll take your recommendation, right? And that's from my perspective. Throughout my whole career, I've always demanded, or I've always asked that my leadership listens to me, listens to my opinion, my perspective, my recommendation. Whether they accept it or not is a different story. There might be other factors and reasons out there why they may or may not accept that decision. Politics, budgets, whatever it may be, it doesn't matter. I will sign up and say, yes, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, we're going to go out and do this. What's important to me is that I'm heard. And that's the most important thing in a team environment. Magic will happen and people will work together as a team to do some heroic and some unbelievable things. And I've seen amazing examples of that. As you know me, Joe, I'm famous for saying the phrase, pick up the damn phone.
Pick up the phone.
Pick up the damn phone, right? I'm really trying to change, especially coming out of the COVID era where we retreated to our homes and our emails and our Teams chats. To get off of that electronic communication and do more of that in-person communication. Because I find when you and I are talking to each other face-to-face, whether it's in person, whether it's on the phone, we really talk about the real challenges and issues, and then we can really make the magic happens. Sending fire and forget emails or just assuming, hey, I send an email, and that's ineffective communication. So I'm really striving to focus on the importance of effective communications, effective collaboration, And helping folks have the right levels of conversations. You know, something we teach a lot in Propel is, the conflict continuum, right? You want healthy conflict, you want healthy dialogue between people that are looking at each other in the eye and not creating, you know, unhealthy tension, unhealthy anxiety and hard feelings and emotional responses because people don't know how to write emails or communications, right? Pick up the damn phone and have the right conversation at the right level. You know, as a senior executive now, probably a couple of the highlights that meant the world to me was when I had deputy program managers privately reach out to me and said, you know what, Howard, you kind of stepped on my toes. I was going to handle this situation and you came in a little bit too strong. You know what, Howard, I got this. Just step back a little bit. Give me a chance to solve this problem because I'm a problem solver. I want to jump in. And I was empowering our folks and I was so happy. I was ecstatic. I said, thank you for giving me that candid feedback. I'm so grateful that you felt comfortable to push back on me and tell me to kind of just step back and to trust them. It was great to me that they felt comfortable enough to give that feedback and made my day. And so important that no matter what level of the organization, I want the deck plate folks to feel comfortable enough to give me candid and timely feedback. Means the world to me.
That's literally textbook psychological safety. You know, you're talking about it from an experience perspective and experience base versus reading it in a book. But that's exactly what that is. So you're leading that way. What is it that's different about being a senior executive being a second level manager, for example?
Great. I believe that there's a lot of opportunity to remove barriers and cut through bureaucracy and to really kind of see the forest through the trees, right? I think we often get distracted on a day-to-day basis by a lot of things that shouldn't distract us. And I've learned this over my career, right? When I used to spend a lot more time on nitty-gritty issues. And as you move up in leadership positions, you have less bandwidth to focus on individual issues, except for the ones that are the highest visibility ones. So you have to learn how to lead bigger teams, right? And to be more effective in that time. And so from a first level supervisor, second level supervisor, when I managed a whole program office and now into an SES position where I in the program executive office for integrated warfare systems, we have 12 different program offices, 171 programs, 400 people. It's a huge organization. So I have to learn how to be as effective as possible and influence as much as possible. I call myself the chief influencer in my organization because I don't have any direct Title 10 authority or budget authority. But what I do is I influence the organization and different program managers and offices to move in specific directions where I think they should be focused on. I spend a lot of time addressing seam issues between organizations, whether it's between internal program office seam issues or external organizations. I do a lot of external stakeholder management to ensure alignment across the board. But I really spend a lot of time identifying where there's development needs in the organization, mentoring, developing, making sure that folks have the right opportunities to learn and grow. Just a couple of days ago, I had someone shadow me for a day, and I make that a part of my routine. At least once a month, I'll have someone shadow me. I have a number of people that I mentor with on a regular basis and help them, I understand what their own career path looks like, but also what areas do they need to be focusing on. I try and do a lot of listening at the deck plate levels as well and try and get a sense for how things are going and where there might be strife in the organization or concerns or conflict and try and pay attention to that, focus on that. Super important. And that builds a lot of trust and respect with the workforce. And I just want to emphasize it's up, down, and across. We need to be building those relationships with our leaders above us, with our workforce below us, and with our stakeholders across. It goes all ways. You can't just be good at one of them. You can't just be good at communicating with your leaders above, because your workforce, if your workforce doesn't trust you or doesn't like you, they're not going to communicate with you. They're not going to tell you what's going on. They're not going to tell you that you're all screwed up. Yeah, as a leader, you got to have that experience and knowledge and sense when you need to get the right people in the right positions to solve the hard problems, because that's not always intuitive at the deck plate level. I see a lot of suffering in silence. I see this all the time, actually, at the deck plate level. In fact, I am conscious of it because I used to be one of them, and I used to suffer in silence. I used to think I was stuck. I used to think I couldn't move the needle, and I was waiting for someone to give me permission or to give me help. And I would just, I always thought my boss, my supervisor was too busy to help, and I didn't raise the issue. So I'm on a warpath these days to make sure people do not suffer in silence, that bad news doesn't stop at a certain level, that I will always have time, I will always have bandwidth, and I expect my leadership below me will always be available to elevate challenges and difficulties, whether it's a technical, whether it's a contract, whether it's a funding challenge. Please elevate. Please elevate, and don't be the person that is the last person on that chain with the bad news. Don't feel like you are the person that has to suffer. No, elevate, 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 and let others help, let us, because we have greater bandwidth. I have a greater view of the landscape. I know a lot more people out there that can help. I do this all the time. I make calls to colleagues and other stakeholder organizations to unstuck, whether it's a document, whether it's funding, whether it's contracts, whether it's a technical approval. I have the ability to make a phone call and unstick that. And I need people to do that. And then I went to the Pentagon. I did a 1-year rotation at the Pentagon. And I saw how business really got done at the Pentagon. And it was a bunch of 04s and 05s, those lieutenant commanders and commanders that somehow had the influence to make, hundreds of millions of $1 billion decisions. And whether programs survived or didn't or got accelerated, I learned, it's like on Capitol Hill, right? It's really run by a bunch of 20-something-year-olds that really, write the bills and do all that engagement. So once I learned how the Pentagon works, how the bureaucracy really works, I came back to this side of the river and I said, I got it. I am no longer waiting for someone to tell me to go do something. I'm not waiting for someone to give me permission. I'm going to move out. I'm going to use the bureaucracy to my advantage. I'm going to move out. This is what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to do it. Now I took action, right? That I also had to make sure I had my stakeholders and my chain of command aligned. So in addition to being action oriented, I had to make sure I was communicating regularly with my stakeholders, with my leadership. Hey, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. Do you have any questions, comments, or concerns? 9 times out of 10, no issues, right? I moved out. This is very similar to what former Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Hondo Gertz, said on day one when he came and talked to all the program managers. And he empowered program managers. You are empowered to do your job and get stuff done and plow through the bureaucracy and make decisions. And he said, there is no decision that you can make that I can't undo in 10 minutes with a phone call, right? He delegated power down to program managers to go move out. Now, I recognize we still have a lot of bureaucracy in different places, and we got to work through that. But the reality is, every one of us is more empowered than we think we are, and we need to take that responsibility, that authority, and move out and go make stuff happen and go drive results and go make decisions, right? Go award contracts and come through technical challenges. We have to move the ball forward, especially in this day and age, as we get closer and closer to the Davidson window. We do not have time to polish the rock. We do not have time to admire the problem. We do not have time to suffer in silence. We have to be action-oriented and elevate when we are stuck or if someone is telling us no. The other big thing that always stuck with me was I had a program manager who on the first day of the job told the entire workforce, no one in this office has the authority to say no except for me. So it'll be a yes if, or you bring to my attention and we will have a conversation, okay? And I thought that was very powerful as well. And that changed the culture, that changed the mindset. People had to think differently and come up with solutions or alternative or courses of actions to be considered if we were going to make a decision, yes or no, or how to move out.
You had mentioned something called the Davidson window a minute ago. Many people who work where you work and where I work know what that is. Some of our audience, they're not going to know what that is. So can you explain that just a little bit?
Absolutely, Joe. The Davidson window is defined as a period of time when the U.S. believes that China will have enough confidence and resources to potentially invade Taiwan. So in our Navy world and defense world, we talk about the Davidson window. It is preparing our forces and delivering capabilities, training of our sailors, readiness to be prepared for a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan at a probable time of January 1st, 2027 or later.
So in other words, be ready to operate differently than we have. On that, you had mentioned supporting the Red Sea earlier. I wonder how much of a concept the rest of the, you know, the public has when it comes to what's actually happening out there in terms of what the Navy's doing and how specifically the work that you and NAVC does to support it.
Absolutely. So ever since Hamas invaded Israel in October of 2023 in that surprise attack, ever since that point, we have had a strong Navy presence in the Red Sea during the Hamas and Israel conflict. And the Houthis in Yemen have had a constant, effort to attack both Israel and our Navy ships. They'd started with attacking commercial vessels, and as a result, that's why we have a strong Navy presence there to protect the commercial traffic there. And then, so the Houthis started first attacking commercial traffic, and then they started attacking our ships. They attack Israel. And then what we call defense of Israel, when Iran attacked Israel with a whole, there's two rounds of major attacks, air-launched missiles. We supported Israel and the defense of Israel with our Navy ships. That our ships and sailors have been in harm's way in the Red Sea vicinity under constant threat from the Houthis. And it to this day, I mean, there's almost every day there's some type of threat or attack on our Navy ships or against Israel. And making sure that our, again, brave women and men sailors who are operating those ships have the right equipment, the readiness, that they have confidence in their combat systems to defend themselves and defend our allies, and that they are trained and are able to do that is amazing, right? We are in actual naval conflict for the first time really since World War II. Are our ships in constantly engaging in both missile and drone, one-way drone attack threats. And we are constantly learning. It's been an incredible process. So, you know, I'll give you an example. At first, getting data off the ship so we can assess our performance. At first, it took weeks and months to get data. Now we're getting data off our ships in a matter of days or hours, right? We've turned that process very quickly where we can get that data, make an assessment, and look. And we're, you know, constantly learning and adjusting. As the Houthis have adjusted their tactics and their weapons, we are constantly adjusting our defense and our combat systems, our ability to defend every day.
Tie that data into that for me. Because, I mean, getting lots of data, but what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
Like, why is that helpful?
It's super important to get the data so we understand the threats that we're seeing and how our systems are performing against those threats. So we are looking at the threats and we are looking at our combat system, defense systems to see how they operate. And are we successful? Are we not? What do we need to do differently? So it's a combination of tactics, like how we're implementing the combat systems and our readiness of our combat systems. Are they functioning? Are they working as intended? And then the training of the sailors to make sure they know how to operate, right? So it's training, it's tactics, and it's combat system readiness. And that data informs all three of those spectrums.
A little bit closer to home, if you will. There's been a lot of changes in the federal sector. We're not immune to that. Talking about leading through change, what are some of the specific skills, maybe techniques that you found are most effective in leading teams and bigger organizations like you're leading now through periods of significant change. And if you have a story that can illustrate that, maybe that story's fresh.
Absolutely, Joe. This is the last few months have been very dynamic. Last 3 months have been very dynamic. And there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of concern from the workforce, especially in the early days. There was, you never knew what new executive order was going to come out, what new direction. Folks were nervous about their jobs for a while. However, the good news is in our business, our customer is the sailor. At the end of the day, we are very mission focused. So we continue to remind the workforce day in and day out that their work matters so much. And yes, there's noise happening on the outside. And yes, there's some things we're going to have to do differently. We need to come back in the office full time instead of a hybrid telework in office posture and other things that were happening. But at the end of the day, we need to stay committed and focused on the warfighter. At the end of the day, making sure that they are protected, that when they go into harm's way, that they feel they are protected, that they have their confidence in their combat systems, and that they come home safely to their families. That mission hasn't changed from day one, and folks really have continued to rally around that despite everything else going on. We have figured out how to work through the different orders, whether it's travel restrictions, we have figured out how to continue to support the warfighter 100%, and folks are really dedicated to that. Now, through the deferred resignation program, we are losing a significant chunk of the workforce, 10%+ of the workforce. And we're going to lose a lot of knowledge and experience. And, a lot of folks who were, say within the window of retirement, is an opportunity for them to go out. And there's a lot of other folks who are not near retirement age. We're losing a lot of future leaders that are taking the DRP, the Deferred Resignation Program. So we're losing a lot of talent across the board, no question about it. And it's going to be a loss and we're going to feel it. However, there's an opportunity, right? When you have significant change, it presents opportunity to think and do things differently. And that's what I have really embraced, and the senior leadership around me has really embraced, and we talk to the workforce. We have an opportunity with everything happening with the loss of the workforce to really do things differently. And we need to think hard. How are we going to do things differently? My organization is going offsite shortly for a couple of days to talk about how we're going to restructure and reorganize to be more effective and efficient, especially taking into consideration the 10% workforce loss. What does that mean to us? How are we going to operate differently? How are we going to think differently, right? Where are we going to take some more risk in our day-to-day operations? Where can we afford to take risk? What are our primary focus areas, right? Supporting the fleet, of course, is always going to be number one. Making sure that the fleet is supported and gets the tools and equipment and the training that they need to do their operation. Those deployed ships, we are always going to focus on that. But we're also developing and delivering game-changing capability in the future. And so we need to make sure we stay on track for that. Are there other things, are there other efforts that are maybe less important? And that's where we need to prioritize our efforts as a whole and making sure that we're focused on our top priorities. And perhaps we're going to take some risks. Perhaps we're going to not do some things. Perhaps there's some bureaucratic processes that we can maybe put to the side for now. That's what we need to talk about and think about. I remember I graduated from Harvard Business School, and I remember one of my classes that I took was on change, leading change, actually was the title of the class by Rosabeth Kantor Moss. And we talked about how in economic downturns, when which really affect a lot of companies and organizations, and we talked about how top companies use those economic downturns as opportunities. Opportunities to think differently, maybe a forcing function to look at what their core mission is or what their...
Bringing that a little bit closer to home, both for leaders and the people that they're leading in this new environment that we're entering into, how do we look for talent where that talent hasn't been used in the past? So for example, you no longer need the work that person A is doing, and that person might be amazing at task Z. How do we even know that? How do we connect those pieces? Because I think that's the environment we're headed into, is an environment where we've got talent, but we don't know that it's untapped. How do we discover that as a leader?
There are two major points on that one. One, with the departure of 10% of the workforce, it creates an opportunity for people to step up. And that's what we're talking about when we talk to our teams. Hey, here's an opportunity for you to step up, to grow your skill sets, to develop, to get uncomfortable, step into a position of opportunity. You have the skills, you have the experience. Get out of your comfort zone, step up, volunteer yourself, put yourself out there. We have so many voids out there. We have so many needs. So it's an opportunity for the workforce writ large to step up into new areas. That's happening with me personally. I am taking the opportunity to step up and help NAVSE think about reimagining NAVSE, how we do things differently. How can we be more efficient? And I'm living that dream personally right now.
Howard, what is making you hopeful as a leader right now?
It's all about the mission, Joe. It is making sure that our brave women and men sailors out there have everything they need to defend themselves, defend their ships, defend our allies, and defend our country, and maintain that democracy. For you and I, we think about our kids and our grandkids and the next generation, and we want them to grow up in a world like us, like we are, a free and democratic society. And we want our sailors to come home to their families, safe and sound. So what gives me hope is that our workforce feels the same way. Every person I talk to on the floor shares that same vision, that same passion. My colleagues and I are here because of the mission. We are not here to get rich. We are not here to further our own personal ambitions. It's not about us. It's about the sailors. And that's what gives me hope. Day in and day out, I love coming to work. I love working with my colleagues. I think our strength is our mission and our vision. And we all understand what's at stake. And we're all in it together. I can't tell you how many times that I'm on the phone nights and weekends and holidays because of critical mission needs, right? It's not because the non-important stuff. It is because there's a ship out there that needs our help. There's a sailor out there that needs our help. And people will step up. They will do whatever it takes. They will fly across the world to support that sailor, to fix that system. That is incredible. That's inspiring. And that keeps me going 24/7 around the clock, and that keeps all my colleagues in that same boat.
Thank you for joining this episode of the Fuel Podcast, brought to you by NAVSE's Propel Leadership Development Program. Thanks for adding fuel to propel your journey.